Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Boyle, and before we dive into this week's episode, I have a really small favour to ask. If you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast, can you please hit the subscribe button on your podcast app now? This helps tell everybody else that this is a great podcast to listen to. Okay, getting back to this week's episode, I have a special guest on the show, Amy K. Wilson. Amy is a board-certified geriatric pharmacist, a certified fitness professional, and a certified nutrition coach. Her mission is to empower and equip her clients to take charge of their health and find balance in their lives. In my conversation with Amy today, we chat about blood sugar levels, inflammation, general health, longevity, aging well, and women's health and fitness. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. As you know, all our areas of health are interlinked, and that's where this conversation leads us today. Hi, I'm Kate Boyle, and welcome to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. Each week, I'll be bringing you health information from diet and lifestyle to movement and nutrition. My aim is to bring you bite-sized pieces of information that you can instigate into your everyday life to change your health. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. I have a very special guest on the podcast this week. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Now, before we dive in, because we're going to chat about all things health, but mainly blood sugar levels and inflammation and all these things that, you know, it's great to know about to help with our health, can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. My name is Amy Wilson. I am a board-certified geriatric pharmacist, a professional fitness pro since I was 17 years old. We'll get into age later. And then I'm also a certified nutrition coach. I go by, I go by the nutrition coach pharmacist because I use all three of those modalities in seriously coaching mostly midlife women and in nutrition, in fitness. And helping people stop chasing skinny and start getting strong and healthy.
Mm. Well, all those modalities blend so well together. And as we know, our health isn't just one thing. They're all interconnected. So I'm assuming it works really well to pair them together.
It does. And I always say I'm a pharmacist who would prefer that you are not on medication because medication's a treatment, not a cure. So let's do some preventable health. And that all comes down to what we eat and how we move.
That's the crutch of it, isn't it? Right at the, you know, start, the boring stuff that we don't want to address. A client said to me the other day, they said they were working with their physio and they said, can't you just give me a pill or something? And he was like, no, you've got to do the work. Like, first and foremost, we've got to do the work.
Yeah, we're such a pill and even I'll say injection society, that we want Amazon Prime. We want things in 2 days. We want things like Instagram. It's there. It's flashy. It's we can scroll through it very quickly. And our bodies are not on that timetable. They're not in Amazon Prime time. They're not in that quick fix time. Our bodies have their set rules, and those things take time, and healing takes time, and prevention takes time. And it's not a quick fix. It's not a quick diet start stop date, and everything's going to be all cured, amazing. It's one of those things that we just have to, I say, embrace the journey, embrace the time that it takes to get there, and know that it's a continuational journey. It's not something that you're going to ever stop with. Prevention is always going to be in the forefront of your mind and something that you have to think about. Does that mean that you're not going to enjoy life? No, it means you're going to enjoy life even more so because you're going to be able to be healthy and strong and be able to do all the things that you want to do.
I 100% agree. And when it comes to sort of thinking about prevention and some lifestyle changes that people can really make to reduce their inflammation, what do you start to suggest?
The first thing is I want people to go look at their pantries and their refrigerators and look at what you have. And is it what's called ultra processed foods? Is it things that come in a box, in a package that has pretty colors all over it? Because more than likely, that's things that have additive flavors and chemicals and sugar and dyes and preservatives. And that does not serve your body. That's not nutrition. And that's what I tell people to look at first. And then what can we start replacing that with? Maybe it's soda pop, and we're going to start doing more water. Maybe it's fruit roll-ups, and we're going to start putting real fruit instead of the fruit roll-ups. A lot of our convenience food is disguised as healthy food when it really isn't. And it's understanding and educating, and then not getting rid of per se, but replacing it with something that is a little bit better, more nutritious, and serves your body.
Mm. And I think, you know, it is, you know, if you are buying a packet or a box, you know, because sometimes you will, you know, yeah, reading the ingredient list and seeing, you know, where sugar is on that ingredient list. Is it right up at the start or is it further down? And like you said, does it have additives, preservatives, chemicals, and dyes, which most of them do, unfortunately, and steering clear of them as much as you can. But there is a move towards trying to create processed food that has less of those chemicals in from some companies, which is great. Yeah. But I think just being able to read the back of a packet can make a difference as well.
Absolutely. And I always feel that some people, you know, probably like, oh my gosh, it's so confusing. Real food's not confusing. An apple's not confusing. Vegetables aren't confusing. Meat is not confusing. Think about taking it back to the basics. And the pushback I'll get is like, oh, but I'm not a cook. It's okay. Nobody's a cook when they first start. You don't have to prepare these 7-course meals. You can make it as simple as possible, and you'll still get the benefits than eating something that just is always coming out of a container or a frozen food that says it's healthy, which really isn't. And just getting back to those basics, you'll learn and your body will thank you.
Mm. And there is so many things we can do just with, you know, basics. If you're chopping up some veggies and then having, you know, a protein sauce, you know, like chicken or fish, and just do a little drizzle of olive oil and a squeeze of lemon and some salt and pepper, you can have a really delicious, nourishing meal that doesn't really take that long to put together.
Yeah. Sometimes we make things more complicated than they really are. And I tell my clients all the time, let's keep it as simple as possible, because that's what's going to help you. Because if you make it harder, you're just going to be like, peace out, I'm done. And we've all been there. We've made something harder than it is, or we've talked ourselves out of it. But if it's something that we really, really want, we know that we can do it, we'll figure it out.
Mm. And for listeners listening in, you know, blood sugar levels, I feel like, you know, we've gone through sort of topics of like gut health has become popular, and now paying attention to sort of blood sugar levels with the, you know, continuous glucose monitors coming out and being more available. Why should listeners be paying attention to their blood sugar levels?
So blood sugar levels are so important. And the reason they're important is our bodies have this great, great, great system of keeping everything in check. And that's what insulin sometimes is made to be, the unpopular guy, the devil, the thing that's not good. Insulin is a good thing. The problem is what we do and why we make insulin work harder or release more. And we do that with the foods that we eat. So what happens with blood sugar? What we really want is this kind of like wave that we go up and down, and I'll get clients going, but I went up. And I'm like, that's okay. Our blood sugar will go up and down. That's normal. When you eat, it should go up and then it should come down. What we don't want, and this is what we're doing with ultra processed foods, added sugar, chemicals, is that we're getting what's called these blood sugar spikes. And it's not just this little rolling hill, it's this peak, and it's a high peak. And then we come crashing down, and then we do it again, And then we come crashing down and you get the picture. So just think about a picture where it's like, you know, it's up, down, and the extreme levels. That's becoming the norm. And that's not good. And what that does is it causes inflammation. It promotes disease. It usually gives us brain fog. We may have headaches. We may have that energy crash at 2 p.m., may not be sleeping well. So blood sugar is tied to a lot of things that we take for granted, or we say, oh, it just must be work. I must be stressed out, or it's perimenopause or menopause. And we're not thinking that it has anything to do with how we're eating, what we're ingesting, how we're moving, but our body is telling us, hey, something's not right. And it is the way that our blood sugar might be coming up extremely high and then crashing extremely low.
Mm. And we've touched on, you know, managing our blood sugar with, you know, choosing foods that are whole foods, less processed, less sugar. Movement-wise, what are the things we can be doing movement-wise to help our blood sugar as well?
Movement-wise, honestly, just taking a walk right after you eat is one of the best ways to decrease your blood sugar. Because what happens, think about when you're walking, you're going to walk, you're not really thinking about what muscles you're working, but you're really working everything. You're working your upper body, you're working your core, you're working your legs and your glutes, and your legs and glutes are some of the biggest muscles in your body. Well, what happens is that your muscles need energy. They need glucose. They're going to pull that glucose out of the blood and use it for energy. And that's going to help soften that peak, soften that spike so that it brings your blood sugar down. And it doesn't have to be hours. It is a 5 to 10 minute brisk walk just after you eat something will always help to decrease that blood sugar.
And culturally, that is in a lot of cultures that, you know, they will eat and then go for a walk as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that you can do is start lifting weights. The more muscle you have, the more insulin receptors that you have, the more that your muscles need fuel, and they will pull the glucose out of the blood for fuel. So muscle is a good thing. And as females, sometimes we cringe away from that. We're like, oh, but I want to be skinny. I don't want muscles. But muscles is a really good thing, especially as we age. You need those muscles. You need the muscles to get out of your chair, to get out of your car, to pick up your kids, to pick up the groceries. You're not going to get huge. You're not going to get big. You're not going to get bulky. But muscle is the fountain of youth. And that's something that we really need to start embracing.
And I think too, especially for women, as they're starting to hit perimenopause and menopause and they're having hormones changing and we can become more at risk of, you know, loss of bone strength and loss of muscle mass, that it can be even more important for that age group as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, because, you know, we want to prevent osteoporosis, and the more muscle that we have, the more that we're protecting that spine. And it's just there's no downside to having muscle. And I want women to, especially in my age, Generation X, maybe baby boomers, it was always frowned upon to have muscle. You don't want to look like a guy. You won't look like a guy, but you will help yourself and you will not feel your age. And more likely, you won't look your age either.
Which is always a bonus, because we are going to talk about aging as well with this. So how does, you know, high blood sugar levels or higher levels of inflammation affect our aging?
So when you have these spikes, like I said, it's okay to have these little peaks and valleys. When you're having these spikes, you're constantly having these spikes, you get something that's called glycation. And glycation is when a sugar molecule binds to a protein and a fat. Well, normally that's fine. We want that to happen. But when you are constantly inundated with a high blood sugar from eating ultra processed foods, maybe lots of added sugar, lots of junk food, that's not a good thing, because you get what's something called ages, which is kind of cool. It's like, hey, these ages age you, right? And that is advanced glycation end products. And when you have these ages, well, that starts promoting inflammation. That starts increasing your wrinkles. That starts causing sagging skin, a breakdown of collagen. Okay. Well, collagen's the buzzword now. I mean, everybody's taking collagen, and collagen's the buzzword. We want to build that collagen. We want to keep that collagen. And then also what happens with the increase in the ages is that now we're talking about cell and tissue damage and organ damage. And this, there's just so many things that are caused by the increase of blood sugar with the promotion of inflammation and then also aging you, that if we really start to look at how we're eating, how we're moving, and keeping that blood sugar, I call it, it's stable, blood sugar stable, you will find one that you feel better. And then we can start also preventing disease.
And I know quite a few women that I've spoken to, they've been like, oh, I've been to the doctor and I had a blood test done and they said my blood sugar levels was a little bit high, but not to really worry about it yet. Like, we'll just wait a little bit, you know.
Okay. So more than likely what they had was a test called an A1C. And an A1C is a snapshot of what your blood sugar has been doing for the past 3 months. You may also get what's called a fasting blood glucose. And that's when they take your blood in the morning before you've eaten anything to see what that number is. Some people will be right along the line before pre-diabetic, and some people will be pre-diabetic. And the doctor's like, oh, well, we'll just see what happens and worry about it when we get there. No, your body is now saying, hey, wake up. This is your opportunity to do something. This is your opportunity to say, okay, we're not going to move up the chain and become diabetic, or we're not going to go into pre-diabetes, that we can do something now to take that A1C lower, to take that fasting blood glucose lower, and not even worry about getting up in those numbers. It's harder once you get up in those numbers, when you can start and say, hey, you know, today I am going to take charge of my health. I had the warning signs that my body, you know, decided to give me because of those numbers. And I'm going to take charge and use the power that I know and the knowledge and start to reverse this disease progression and not let it get to the next phase.
And if somebody is listening in and sort of like, oh yes, that is me. I have been told I'm a bit, you know, my blood sugar levels are high and I'm pre-diabetic. You know, they can start to avoid sugars and processed foods and make sure that maybe they can look into sort of adding some weights into their exercise. But sort of management lifestyle wise, when we think of sort of maybe stress and sleep, you know, are there other sort of lifestyle factors you like to suggest to them as well?
Absolutely. So not only is it nutrition is a big part, exercise is a big part, but if you're not sleeping, now we're talking about increased cortisol. If you're not sleeping, we're talking about decreased insulin sensitivity and increase in insulin resistance. And you're like, sleep? Yeah. Sleep is big. Sleep is big in pretty much every disease state. And we even know that lack of sleep is possibly an increase in Alzheimer's. Not only diabetes, but Alzheimer's, diabetes, heart disease. So we wear not getting sleep with a badge of honor. I only need 4 hours of sleep. Ask yourself right now. We've all done it. It's like, oh yeah, I pulled it, especially college. Hold an all-nighter, it's good. You know, doctors, if they're going through school, it's like, how many? Oh yeah, I can do 72 hours straight. That's not really something to be proud of. And we need to understand that it's okay to turn our phones off at night. It's okay not to be available 24/7. It's okay to get into a sleep habit or a sleep hygiene that you're going to bed the same time every night. That's not being lazy. That is being preventative. That is being smart so that you can help yourself. Hydration is another big one. I mean, I said get rid of the soda pop and have water. Your body needs water. We're made of a lot of water. We need that. And so drink. Hydration is also so important. So we got sleep, we got movement, we got hydration, and we got nutrition. All of those, and I don't want to say like, oh my gosh, it's so much. Pick one thing. And then I always say, well, we're going to get better and better every day. And then we're going to work on something else. But sleep is actually one of those things that you can work on tonight. You decide what's a good time that you want to be in bed. and what time that you need to get up. And it should be somewhere between 7 and 9 hours that you are getting restful sleep. And start making a habit every night. It might be taking a shower, or washing your face, brushing your teeth. Every night you do something with your kids, you tell them a story. It's kind of like the same thing that you set them up for bed. You need to do the same thing to set up yourself for bed. So it might be also your room's cooler because that's going to help you sleep. Sometimes taking a shower before you go to bed, that helps you sleep. Having ambient noise helps you sleep. So, you know, maybe some meditation helps you sleep. But sleep is so important in getting that REM sleep, that really deep sleep, extremely important. So if you're a light sleeper, we need to start working on that REM sleep.
And what's your take on, say, caffeine and alcohol and how that can affect our sleep?
So it's funny because, you know, some people with caffeine, it a lot depends on your genetics as to how caffeine affects you. And some people can just metabolize caffeine like that. And there's other people that they have a cup of caffeine, you know, a cup of coffee, and they are just bouncing off the walls. It still can affect your sleep. So whether you think that caffeine doesn't affect you, I'm one of those people who's a high metabolizer, but it still affects my sleep. So you always want to be kind of cut off the caffeine around 2 p.m. That gives you plenty of time to get that washout period so that you're going to be able to get some sleep. And that's what I would suggest for the caffeine and just being careful of how many cups of coffee. I mean, I love coffee. Here it's starting to get cold. So it's like, it's not that I drink it for the caffeine. I just drink it because I love it. And replacing that with maybe some tea, green tea, which has great antioxidants, and being mindful of how much you are ingesting with caffeine. And then alcohol, oh, ladies, I'm not going to be popular here. So alcohol, one, does not help you sleep. We think it does, but it doesn't give us that deep REM sleep. The other thing that alcohol does is it stops our metabolism. And you're like, what? What do you mean it stops our metabolism? Okay, well, our body says, hey, what is this stuff that you're ingesting? Okay, this is not supposed to be here. Get out. And it puts all of its resources to the liver to get this toxin, because that's what it sees alcohol is a toxin. And it puts all the resources to the liver. So it stops everything else. And if you are doing that nightly, and ladies, let's be honest, what's our glass of wine look like? It's not a serving size. A serving size is 4 ounces.
Yeah, it's actually quite tiny.
It's very tiny. And I know most of my wine glasses, they can pretty much hold a half bottle. And if you're having that glass of wine every night, you're like, why am I getting bloated? Why am I not sleeping? Why am I feel fatigued or headache or joint pain? It really could be that nightly glass of wine that you think that it is helping you wind down. But it's really not, I always say serving you. It's not serving you. And I'll get, oh, but I love my wine time. And I have all these clients like, I love my wine time. I love my wine. A lot of times it's just the behavior that you love. You love the feel of the glass. You love being able to sit in your favorite chair. And maybe it's watching a certain show or reading a chapter of your book with that calmness of that glass. Well, let's try something else. Let's try some sparkling water, or maybe it's water with lemon or some fruit infused. The same act, the same behavior, but without the wine, and see if that helps.
Yeah, doing a swap rather than feeling like you have to cut out everything that's associated with it, just doing a direct swap with a healthier option.
Yeah, exactly.
And with cortisol and how that affects our sleep, I have a number of women that always say they can fall asleep really easily, but at like that 2 or 3 a.m. mark, they wake up and then they just can't get back to sleep.
Yeah. So sometimes it has to do with how much carbs you're intaking. And it may be that you're not intaking enough carbohydrates. A lot of times that's a dip or it's actually a spike. And it can be related to not eating enough carbohydrates at night. And I can't tell you how many clients I get who are usually keto, have been doing keto, and are scared to death of bringing carbs back in because we've been told carbs are the enemy. carbs are going to make us fat. Well, yeah, pizza, pie, you know, processed foods. I always say the P words. Those are not our friends, but fruits, vegetables, bananas, rice, potatoes, all can be incorporated into your nutrition. And if you're only eating protein and fat at night, maybe just adding a little bit of carbs will help you sleep the rest of the night. And that 2 a.m. is that cortisol spike saying, hey, time to get up, because that's what technically cortisol is supposed to do. It's supposed to spike in about maybe 4:30, 5 o'clock to wake us up. We're getting dysregulated. We're causing it to spike earlier. And then it's like, hey, time to get up. And we're like, no, we don't want that yet. It may be a possibility of intermittent fasting, and then, but not intermittent fasting, starving. Intermittent fasting is a tool. You still need to hit all your food, all your macronutrients, your protein, fats, and your carbohydrates. And that will help get you on a schedule to make sure that you're getting enough. I will bet most women don't eat enough, and they will probably say, but, and I'm going to say, okay, I want you to think about everything that you've done and all the diets that you have been on. They haven't worked for a reason, because starving doesn't work. Starving actually uses our muscle. And we already talked about how much muscle is so important. You're really not burning that much fat when you're starving yourself. And every time we did that, we've messed up our metabolism and we've messed up our thyroid. So when we can start eating right, and even with intermittent fasting, which I coach, it's a tool to use so that we can regulate hormones, so we can help our hormones, so that we can increase insulin sensitivity and decrease insulin resistance, and also do something called autophagy, which is a cell turnover. But that doesn't mean OMAD, which is one meal a day, which a lot of people think that's what intermittent fasting is. No, it's a tool to use, but you still have to get your food in. You still have to get your nutrition in, because your body is a machine. It is one big chemical reaction, and it needs all those micronutrients, all those macronutrients to survive. And if you want to change the shape of your body, you have to eat. You have to eat. And that is something that we've been told over and over again. It's like, you're just eating too much. You're just eating too much. No, you're just not eating the right things, and maybe in the right quantities. And when you start doing that and everything starts getting balanced and your blood sugar, let's go back to the blood sugar, your blood sugar is balanced and you're not spiking anymore, guess what else happens? You sleep better. So it's all kind of taking everything and bringing it in together. It's like taking all the pieces of the puzzle and putting it together. And it's like, oh, okay, this is why things work now. This is why I feel better.
And as we were sort of saying before, that everything is interconnected and will have a flow-on effect. So, you may be adjusting your diet, but that will help your sleep. And then if you're sleeping better, you know, you'll feel more energized to do your workout as such.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything, it's like a domino effect. And it can be either way. It can be a domino effect in a positive direction or a negative direction. And once one thing in a positive direction starts going, it's very quickly the dominoes start falling where you feel better and the brain fog disappears. And this, I know most of us are like, oh, a good night. I'm thinking about your best night of sleep. You're just like, oh, that was just the best. Oh, please let that go. Please let me do that again tonight. And it is when you have that sleep, it just seems like everything else falls in place. And especially when we get perimenopause and menopausal, sometimes sleep is difficult. So having good night's sleep is golden.
Hi everyone. I'm interrupting this podcast to let you know that this week only we have a giant special on the Mind Movement Health membership to celebrate our Thrive in 5 challenge. If you join the membership this week, you'll not only get a discounted rate on our monthly and yearly memberships, but you'll also get a 2-week free trial and some awesome bonuses. So to check out the membership, where we have over 100 plus Pilates workouts you can do in the comfort of your own home, healthy recipes, female health masterclasses, and a private Facebook community, head on over to the podcast show notes and check it out now. I can't wait to see you inside the membership. And what's your sort of take on trackables and wearables, whether or not it's like, you know, you can get the Oura Ring or the watches now that track your sleep, as well as, you know, how many steps you do and so much more?
Okay, so I like them. I'm data driven. But you have to know you. If you are somebody who gets obsessed about things, that may not be the right device. I've done a CGM because I do have the type 2 diabetes gene from my dad, and I was spiking. My A1C was going up. I was pre-diabetic. And they're great tracking devices to figure out what you need to do. A lot of times the problem with CGMs is that, and that's a continuous glucose monitor, is you have to realize that CGMs are about 10 to 15 minutes behind what your actual blood glucose is. So if you would prick your finger and the blood comes out and you take your blood sugar at that time, that's your real right now blood sugar. And you think about that blood sugar being the train and being the engine, and then the CGM being the caboose, because what happens with a CGM, it has to go through interstitial fluid. That takes more time. So you'll see a spike or how the food affects you a little bit later. The problem with CGMs are, and I saw this because I was in a Facebook group, of course, is that everybody wants to go keto because they think that is the only way to prevent those blood sugar spikes. It is one way, but it's also not the healthiest way to do it. Oh, there's only a certain percentage of population who actually should do keto. A lot of those have epilepsy or they have other issues that keto is a good option for them. But for most of us, that really isn't a good option because we're not getting our micronutrients. We're not getting all the things that our body needs. So learning how carbohydrates affect you, learning that if you pair a carbohydrate with a protein and a carbohydrate or a protein and a fat, eat that carbohydrate last, and seeing how it affects your blood sugar, that's where those things come in very, very handy. What I also don't like is some people think that they put it on, it will stop them from eating the candy and the donuts and everything else. Okay, it will, because you will see what happens. But just because you're not wearing one doesn't mean that your blood sugar is not going to spike. I know it's one of those things like, oh, but I see it. So if that helps, great. But just understand that just because you're wearing one and you see the spike of what a donut does, when you take that CGM off, you're still going to have the same reaction. It's not just because it's not there, outside, out of mind. It's you're still having those reactions. And so if you can take that information and make a balanced approach, and I want to say emphasize balance, then that is where that's where they help. It's when you go the obsessive compulsive side that it can actually be more detrimental.
Yeah, well, I think they're definitely becoming more popular, you know, more mainstream. The continuous glucose monitors definitely are, and definitely trackables and things. It's quite a big business now, I think, for marketing to get people in, you know, buy this watch because you can track your sleep and your steps and your heart rate and things like that also.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, I'll be honest, I have an Apple Watch. I have a bed that tracks my sleep and I get a score every night. But I'm data driven. I love that data, but I also will find balance. My days of being excessive are over, thank God. But it took me a while to finally figure out balance, and we're all on our own journey. So if it's something you think that's going to help, I always say, don't be afraid to reach out for help and have somebody there guiding you along so that you can make sense of the data. Because sometimes so much data is thrown at you that you're like, what is this? And how am I supposed to do anything with this? And if you have someone that's kind of helping you along, that can save you so much time and so much, I could say, beating your head against the wall sometimes.
And you would mention, before intermittent fasting, and we haven't talked a whole heap on the podcast about intermittent fasting. We've mentioned it, but how do you utilize it with your clients?
So intermittent fasting is it's called time-restricted eating is what it is. And what it means is that for a certain period of time, you have what's called digestive rest, which means you don't eat at all. And then you have a period of time that you do eat. It's called your feeding window. Intermittent fasting can be 12 hours, meaning that you don't eat for 12 hours and that your feeding window is open for 12 hours. It can be what's called 14-10. You'll see here 16-8, which is very popular, which is 16 hours of digestive rest and 8 hours of a feeding window that's open. Once again, it's a tool. And using it as a tool, meaning that I will get a lot of people going, oh, I tried intermittent fasting. It didn't work. And I'll say, okay, well, tell me everything about why it didn't work and what you did. Well, I just ate whatever I wanted during these hours. No, that's why it didn't work. And people are like, but it was less calories. Okay, I'm going to tell you right now, less calories is not equal losing weight. It just doesn't. Less calories is not the way to go. Macronutrients is the way to go. And if you're just counting calories or thinking that because you're eating less and it's not something that your body needs nutritious wise, we are very much malnourished. We're overfed and malnourished, which that probably people are like, what do you mean? We're overfed and malnourished. We are not, we don't have the right amount of protein, the right amount of carbs, the right amount of fat, the right amount of micronutrients in our bodies. We're eating, but we're not getting the nutrition that we need. That's what I mean by being malnourished. And when you use intermittent fasting, use it as a tool to help decrease your insulin resistance, to increase your insulin sensitivity, to help with cortisol, to help with ghrelin and leptin, which are hormones in your gut and in your fat cells. It's a tool, but you have to use it with a good nutrition plan. And when you pair those two together, I always say magic happens, because it does. It's amazing what happens when you feed your body what it needs, and then when you give it digestive rest so that it can rebuild, repair. Theories are that it does help you burn fat a little bit better. And when you use those tools, It's like I said, it's magic of what can happen.
Mm. And I think especially for women, you know, there's not a lot of research that's been done on intermittent fasting for women.
It's mostly men. Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think too, from, you know, the work that I've done in that, sometimes varying fasts, you know, not just always doing the same length all the time, mm-hmm. varying the fast, you know, considering the menstrual cycle and what's happening with that and your hormones, mm-hmm. that can be a big part of it as well.
Yeah. And then if you put in what I also coach is carb cycling. So getting the best of both worlds, it's called making yourself metabolic flexible so that you become more of a fat burner than a sugar burner. And you pair that and changing your macro cycle along with your intermittent fasting cycle. And that may sound everything like, wait, what? That's why you work with somebody to help guide you so that it's not so difficult, because we're not going to start you there. We're just not. Think about anything that you start with, whether it be you train for a marathon or you start a new language, you had to come to a starting point. You had to learn. You don't just go run a marathon tomorrow if you haven't trained for it. It's the same way when you learn how to eat and when you learn nutrition, it's a learning process. And the best thing that you can do is take baby steps and don't go for perfection. Females, we have I know me, I always thought I had to be perfect. I had to be perfect. If I wasn't perfect on this diet, it wasn't going to work. And then it was my fault. And I got to start all over. That mentality doesn't serve us. Knowing that it's progress and showing up every day a little bit better is so much more healthy and uplifting and will help you succeed more than saying that you have to be perfect and having that negative connotation.
Mm. And I think also, you know, building your fasting time, like if you start with, you know, 12 hours, it's a pretty reasonable time that most people can, you know, start with.
Yeah. I start anybody with 12 hours. Cause if you think about it, when we wake up in the morning, and I want everybody to, okay, you wake up in the morning, you have some coffee with your creamer. Right. And it's like you grab in maybe a donut or something out the door, and then you go to work and you grab a handful of candy from somebody's desk, or maybe there's donuts in the break room or something. And then maybe lunch, you're like, oh, but I had those donuts. I'm going to eat a really light lunch to make up for everything. And then it's 2-3 o'clock and you're crashing and you go and grab something else, maybe at Starbucks or something. And then maybe you want to go to the gym and you're like, oh, but I need something because I'm starving. I'm going to the gym. I'm going to work out 2-3 hours. And then you're like, okay, well, I'm gonna have a light dinner because I ate all this other stuff during the day. But then it's 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, and now I'm starving. And oh, that ice cream sounds really good. And you binge, or you have something that was that you weren't planning on. So this is 10, 11 o'clock at night. And now we're going to start this all over again at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. You only had 6 hours of digestive rest, where if you add nutrition through that and have a plan, because I think a lot of times it's just having a plan, knowing what you need to eat and how much you need to eat is one of those things that's like, oh, okay, I can do this. So you have a decent thing at 6 p.m. And then you're like, okay, well, I'm going to eat again at maybe 10 in the morning. And then I'll have my lunch. I'll have a pre-workout snack. And then I'll have my dinner and it'll be done by 6 or 7. Well, now you're done. You're full. You're satisfied. You're not going to get that binging tendency around 9, 10 o'clock because you have a plan. You've been fueling your body the amount that you need. And so that digestive rest comes very, very easy. And it's just 12 hours before you know, it's like, oh, okay, that was intermittent fasting. Well, that wasn't that bad. We used to do that. We used to be done with dinner and we wouldn't eat again until the next morning. That used to be the norm. It's in the last, I would say 10, 15 years that we've had the midnight snacking, and that's becoming even more prevalent.
Well, I think with the rise of all the snack foods now, do you know what I mean? You go in the supermarket and there's literally aisles
everywhere,
chips and crackers and biscuits, and you know, they almost take up the majority of the supermarket, and the fresh food and stuff is always just around the outer edge essentially.
Yeah And it's not packaged pretty either. It's like,
Your kids aren't going up going, hey mom, can I have an apple? They're walking up going, oh, can I have that pink box with Peppa Pig on the front of it that looks, you know, appealing to get?
Yeah, exactly. Marketing smart. I mean, the marketing geniuses in these companies they're smart. They know how to get us in with the packaging. They know how to keep us in with the mouthfeel, with the texture. They want you to keep buying the junk. The thing is, with our brains are wired for sugar. They really are. The same point in our brain that lights up with cocaine lights up when we eat sugar. It's just what it is, because back in the caveman days, sugar meant it was, you know, if something was sweet, it meant it was safe. The problem is that we've taken that to the nth degree, especially when back in the 80s when we went low fat with everything. Fat had to be replaced with something. We replaced it with sugar. So in the 70s when we had heart attacks and the American Heart Association, all of them came out and said, oh, we got to get rid of fat. Fat's the culprit. And they went, okay, we're going to make low fat, fat-free everything, and it's going to have sugar. Well, we replaced one thing with another thing. So we replaced heart disease now with diabetes. And diabetes will go into heart disease too. So we really didn't do ourselves any favor by taking out the fat. But what they've done is brainwashed us to thinking that fat is bad, that, you know, now we hear carbs are bad. And we kind of believe everything that mainstream media says, instead of getting, once again, back to the basics, understanding that we need protein, fats, and carbohydrates and to move our body.
That's it. Finding that balance in all of those things.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women are scared of fat. They are, you know, maybe they grew up in the 80s and the 90s when we really had this big push of, you know, avoid fat, go low fat, and all the products were low fat. So what are the good fats that women should be seeking out to add into their diet?
Oh, avocados. And I know people are like, oh, but and I absolutely love avocados. They're great. But back in the low fat days, I was like, oh no, I can't have avocado. That has too much fat. Nut butters. Yeah, you can have nut butters and olive oil and avocado oil. It's olives. Fat's not off limit. What's off limit is like your vegetable oil, that kind of saturated, you don't want fried food. That is off limits, but healthy fats are good for you. We need fat. That's how hormones are made. We need that fat. That's what helps our skin, helps our hair, helps our eyes. Salmon, getting your fatty fishes. So you're getting your omega-3s. We need that kind of stuff for a healthy body and healthy aging.
Yeah. And I think sometimes there is that disconnect, you know, people go, okay, I know it's better to eat fat, but I'm not really sure what I should be looking for. So I think sometimes it's handy just to have that list of foods that, you know, if you're unsure, you know, add in some olive oil, maybe it's as a dressing, or, you know, use it for cooking, or, you know, even it's just sprinkling some nuts and seeds over your salad and things like that as well.
Yeah. I mean, and they're tasty. It's, and that's the thing, is fat adds flavor. So it's good to have that. And don't feel guilty. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. But I think sometimes letting go of that guilt,
it's hard.
For women, yeah, it's hard, and it's a process. Yeah.
And a lot of things that I coach behavior specialists too is behaviors. It's getting rid of some of those, I won't say limiting beliefs, but they're beliefs that have, that we've had for years, things that we've heard, things that have become our mantra that are just not serving us, and realizing that, you know, if it was working, I wouldn't be here. And that's something I had to tell myself when things weren't working for me and I was finding a different program and learning macronutrients and learning the science. And I kept telling myself, okay, if things were working, I wouldn't be here. So obviously the starvation didn't work. Obviously for me, for keto and some of those other programs and quick fixes, it didn't work. And it was having that light bulb go off, being like, oh my gosh, okay, let's try something different. And realizing that when you look at it as a scientific experiment, when you look at what your body absolutely needs, and when you look at it as, okay, they're chemical reactions, how can I make my body, I would say, go boom, you know, how can we make these chemical reactions just make me feel better? And when you give yourself the right ingredients, it's just like baking, you know, think about baking a cake, and you're baking a cake and you don't put in the baking soda, and yeah, it's something that's really flat. It's nothing happened. And it's just, you just look at it and it's like, oh, what did I forget? Oh yeah. And it's kind of the same thing with our bodies. If we're putting in subpar ingredients or we're forgetting certain ingredients, we can't ever expect our bodies to perform well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think too, you know, when it comes to aging, we really need to focus on looking after ourselves even more, because we don't, you know, our cells don't regenerate as quickly. We don't heal as quickly. And there are changes that are happening that we have to embrace, you know, whilst we're aging as well.
Yeah. And I think with aging, at least now in, I would say in my 50s, it's the balance part has become easier. I think we're chasing skinny for so long, it finally gets exhausting, and we get to a point where it's okay, something has to give, something has to be different. And we realize now, I guess getting into our midlife, that things do have to change if we want to remain independent, if we want to live our best life and start 2.0, our second chapter, that we have to find a different way. And how exhausting is it to be on a diet 24/7? How exhausting is it to always trying to find the latest, greatest trick to get into your genes, when it really comes back down to, if you fuel your body right and if you lift weights and move, your body will do the things that you want to. May not be in the time that you want to, but it's going to get there, and you'll feel so much better. That's the one thing that people always forget, is that it's not about size. It's not about getting back into our skinny jeans that we were in 16. Our bodies have changed, but now it's about getting strong. It's about getting into the clothes and feeling good, but it's also about our cognition. How do we feel? How do we get up in the morning, and do we feel like we are just so achy or headachy or brain fog? Are you now sleeping better? Is your mood better? Because when we eat right, our gut microbiome is improved. That helps with mood and anxiety. There's all these other, like I said, dominoes just come falling that are positive. It's a snowball effect, a positive snowball effect. So not only are you getting into your genes because you are losing inches because you're burning fat and you're bringing in the muscle, but you feel better. And that is priceless.
And we're also living well. We have the capacity to live longer than ever before, We might not be living, you know, as long as we should be because of these sort of lifestyle diseases that have started to come through. And when you're younger and you just want to fit in your genes, you're not thinking about your longevity and living to 80 and 90. But as you start to hit, you know, your 40s and your 50s, I think your mindset changes as well. And you start to realize there's more to life than just trying to look skinny. You know, you want to have a fantastic quality of life for as long as you can.
Yeah. And when you eat right, you do look good. Your skin looks good. You glow. And we forget that because we've been so worried about getting into the skinny jeans that we forget about all the other things that happen when you look healthy. Skinny doesn't equal healthy. And strong does equal healthy. Nutrition equals healthy. And, you know, we want our cognition. We want to be able to lift your grandkids, your kids, your groceries, and doing all those things in your midlife is so, I think it's just so important to have that independence. And we don't think about that in our 20s. We don't. We're not thinking about being independent, and the things that we're doing might have something to do with our outcomes. And we don't even think about that. And I think that's in our 50s, in our 40s and 50s, we need to start looking at that. And I always hear, well, what would you do with your younger self? Okay, well, younger self, been there, done that. She did a lot of things she shouldn't have. She was an exercise addict. She did every single diet. Yeah, no. But I can look in the mirror to my 70, 80-year-old self and being like, okay, I am doing everything possible so that when you're 70 or 80, you're still thriving. You're still living. You're having the best time ever because I'm taking care of this body for you in the future.
Now, before we, you know, finish off the podcast, I always love to ask my guests that if there's one piece of health advice that listeners could go off and instigate straight away after listening to this podcast, what would you suggest?
I would say two things because it's nighttime or my time here, daytime there. Sleep. Start doing your sleep schedule now and just pick one thing that you can swap out that is ultra processed food for something that is less processed.
And I think, you know, the fizzy drinks, the soft drinks are a really simple thing to start swapping with. If you have those in your diet, then, you know, it's a liquid that can be swapped out. You know, even if you drink soft drink and you swap it for a kombucha or something, you know, and then you move to water, there's definitely easy steps you can take there.
Absolutely. And keep it simple. Don't get analysis paralysis or think I got to do everything all at once. Baby steps. Do one thing. And then when that feels pretty good, and you're like, okay, this is normal. Then add something else. And same thing. Once that feels pretty good, add something else.
And I think that's great advice because I know a few of my clients are like, oh, you know, I listen to these podcasts and they sound great, but then I kind of finish listening to them. And then I kind of feel so overwhelmed with all this information that I then don't do anything with the information.
I get that a lot. And so I will actually give your people a freebie because sometimes it is overwhelming and they can go to my website, amykwilson.com, and just send me a message. Just send me a message. Just say mind movement. And I'll know you listen to this podcast and I will send you a free 5-day meal guide. And it will kind of just have a snippet of everything I talked about. And that way you have it in a PDF form. And you can just sit there and read it and a lot of things will come back to you. And it's a meal guide. It has recipes. You can try some new things and maybe that will help you get started.
Amazing. Well, we'll link that up in the show notes as well. And if listeners want to reach out and connect with you at your website and socials, what are your handles? Yes.
The website's best is amykwilson.com. That's actually the best place because you can get my Instagram, LinkedIn, all of those right there on amykwilson.com.
Amazing. Well, again, I'll link that all up in the show notes so listeners can head there. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Amy. I love chatting about, you know, health in general and diving into, you know, nutrition, blood sugar, inflammation. It's all interconnected. So thanks for being such an amazing guest.
Oh, thanks for having me, Kate.
Thanks for listening into the podcast. Please hit subscribe to be updated for each time we release a new podcast.